Welcome to a special edition of John and Todd. On this podcast video, we are going to relate our Nebraska-Oklahoma memories, and there's a fair amount of them, because this is by old people, for old people. Not really, though. It's probably not as many memories as we'd like to have, because we're old and your memories have faded. So we just have to make some shit up. What do you think, Todd?
Well, yeah, my memory's shot. So, you know, I don't know if anything that I spew out of my mouth will be factual. So, you know, you might want to have your fact checker ready. I think we'll come close, though, John.
Okay. What is your first memory of Nebraska, Oklahoma?
Well, you know, I think the first memory that most Nebraska fans have is the game of the century. You know, this is the 50th anniversary of that. I was a little tyke. And I really wasn't a Nebraska fan, but I do remember spending, you know, that afternoon watching that game on television. And, you know, back in that era, there was, you know, one or two games on over the course of a Saturday afternoon, because you only had three channels. But that was a big deal. That was an incredible game. And what, you know, I don't remember many details at all from the game. You know, I've seen video from it. You look at pictures, you read about it and that type of thing. But one of the things I do remember absolutely was I was living in Council Bluffs at the time. And at that point in time, we took three daily newspapers. We took the Des Moines Register. We took the Council Bluffs Nonpareil. We took the Omaha World Herald. And that Sunday, that Omaha World Herald seemed like it was about 2 inches thick. And I just remember that there were so many pictures. There was just so much incredible coverage from that football game. And then there was on Monday and Tuesday, too. I mean, there's just this incredible celebration of this victory, you know, that followed up. And so that's one of my fondest memories. And, of course, you know, in that game, legends were made. You know, Bob Devaney, he became a legend. You know, Jeff Kinney, he became a legend. It was the pivotal game and one that's the benchmark for the Nebraska football legacy.
I used to love looking at the Omaha paper the next morning and seeing the layout of the photos, and they'd have a series of photos that showed how the play developed. Now, I don't remember what photographer I was talking to that told me, but they had two guys that would stand on top of Memorial Stadium. And, you know, you could build like a canister. It's not a normal film roll, but it'd have like, I don't know, 250 foot of film in a canister that you just sit up there and shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. And one has to wonder what happened to all those photos. As a photographer, dude, you know, that would be some amazing stuff if anybody ever saved them, but nobody ever thought about history then. So God knows where they are. I'd like to know where they are. If anybody knows where that kind of stuff is, I'd be certainly willing to steal it from anyone.
I'll bet they're in the archives, because I know, you know, a few years ago, they dug some up from the Des Moines Register when Oklahoma State played Drake and the Oklahoma State player punched the African-American player from Drake right in the jaw. And it was that same sequence. I love those sequence of photos. I mean, I miss seeing those in the paper, you know, especially, you know, when Nebraska was flying high and they had some of those and you could watch that whole play develop. Oh, those are great. I really miss
that. Pointed out all the blocking and all the stuff down the field. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I guess my earliest memory is I don't really remember the game of the century, because I've seen it through, you know, videos, and the same video they show every time, which is Johnny the Jet Rogers tore them loose from their shoes. Lyle Bremser.
What I do remember
is like my family gathering every Thanksgiving in the 70s and watching from 1972 until 1978 and us losing to the evil cheating bastards from Oklahoma, because they who only won because they had a deal with Satan. So that was my impression of it. Every year it was like, what the hell? I mean, it doesn't matter if we were ahead, behind, or whatever. They'd come back and win. And then in 1978, our beloved Tom Osborne finally gets his first win over Oklahoma, and he gets rewarded.
Yeah, you know, that 1978 game has – there's so many levels and so many dimensions to it. Yeah, you know, Tom Osborne finally beats Barry Switzer, finally gets that win against Oklahoma, and then they have to play him in the Orange Bowl. And, you know, okay, so full disclosure here. I really didn't become a Nebraska football fan until I started school there in the fall of 1981. I was a diehard Iowa Stater. I've shared that before. And in fact, I really didn't care for Nebraska at all. And, you know, I won't say I was a Nebraska hater, but for a non-Nebraska fan, you know, it was like, oh, you flipping got to be kidding me. They finally beat Oklahoma, and then they have to turn around and play him again in Miami in the Orange Bowl on New Year's Day. That had to suck. And it did. I mean, because – you know, Nebraska, what they won 17-14, and then they got beat 31-24 in the rematch.
Do you remember the look on Tom Osborne's face?
Yeah, I do. It was, you know, Tom
complete
Osborne,
shock.
Yeah, he's one of the most stoic people that you're going to find, and you know, he has a great poker face, but boy, he let his hand be known with that.
They ask him, they tell him, if I remember right, they did this on national TV, didn't they, or something? I don't know how he saw it. Yeah, but the look is shock. And then they started asking him, like, what do you think of that, Tom? And you know, you want to go, I think this is a big giant fucking screw job. That's what I would, you know, just what the hell, you know?
That 1978 game was one that I'll never forget either. And you know, not that I remember the game blow by blow, but what I do remember is one play from that game. And, you know, again, I was watching this one on television as well with my family. And there was a kickoff where Nebraska kicked off to Oklahoma. And Oklahoma had this player named Kelly Phelps, who was a quarterback that also was a kickoff returner. And it was a great kick because it was a left-footed kicker from Nebraska, and he kind of stuck the ball along the sideline. And Kelly Phelps comes, fields the ball somewhere around 10, 11-yard line, you know, just a couple of feet from the sideline. So he kind of tiptoes on the sideline, and then he kind of cuts the ball back into the middle to find the wedge, you know, for his return. And it seems like out of nowhere, John Rood was like a missile, and he absolutely blew Kelly Phelps up. I mean, he destroyed him. It was the most amazing, destructive hit in a football game I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, there's how the media is sometimes, and writers, you know, they, you know, greatest this, greatest that. That's been called the greatest hit in college football by different people at different times. But the crazy thing is that John Rood came down, absolutely destroyed him. I've just watched the video before we started recording this. It would not be called targeting today because his head went across his body. His head was nowhere close to Kelly Phelps's body. And he just absolutely destroyed him with his shoulder. Well, his entire body. So maybe, you know, because of how powerful it was, they'd call him for targeting in this.
They'd call him for hitting too hard.
They're probably right. Yeah, the Kenny Bell hitting him too hard. So, but, you know, the ball goes flying. Kelly Phelps is on the field, laying flat on the field. Nebraska recovers the ball. And then the crazy thing was, back in 1978, replay was the last thing that anybody had thought about putting in, right, you know, to as part of a rule of the game. They ended up giving the ball back to Oklahoma, claiming that he was on the ground before he fumbled. No, he fumbled before he went unconscious. I mean, that ball was flying out, and Kelly Phelps is still flying through the air. But what an amazing that is the play, Oklahoma, Nebraska, that I'll always remember from that 78 game.
So I got to UNL in 1980. You got their win?
I got their fall of 81.
I don't remember the 80 or 81 games at all. I do vehemently remember 1982, and I've told this story many times. What do you remember about the 1982 game, Todd?
Well, in 1982, our crew, our gang, our squad, whatever you want to call it, all of us that were buddies in college, we had great seats that year. We were on the east side of the stadium, down fairly low. I remember we got there very, very early for that game, and we had great seats. About all of us snuck booze in. I remember that because you used to be able to buy, you know, Coke in a plastic cup, and then you'd swig a little and
the Boda bags.
Yep. And get your, a lot of it was Bacardi 151 and that kind of stuff is what people took in. But you know what, John, I think maybe we ought to take a step back before I get to the game. What I also remember, and it started in that 1982 game, John and I, along with some of our crew from college, we were devotees of the Sidetrack bar. Oh, yeah. And at that time, the Sidetrack was down in the Haymarket on the corner. I think Laszlo's is there now.
Right, yes.
But it occupied the first, the street level down there in the Haymarket across from the depot. And we were regulars, and we were there all the time. And Joyce Duran, who owned the place and played the piano, every Thursday night she'd be in there with the Sweet Potato Band, and they'd be in there on Friday nights. And I don't know if the Sweet Potato Band was there every Thursday night, but if it was a big weekend, they'd be in there, Joyce Duran behind the piano. And I remember for that 82 game, and I also remember for the 84 game, we started at the Sidetrack at about noon on Thursday. And you know, we'd have our tables saved, and, you know, it was just insane. But what was really cool was two things. Joyce Duran was from Oklahoma, and, you know, she was the one of the best cheerleaders for Nebraska that we had, but she was from Oklahoma. And the other thing that was really cool is that Oklahoma fans would start showing up in Lincoln on Thursday. And enough of them, you know, knew about the Sidetrack that a few of them would come in. And, you know, there was just this jovial back and forth. I mean, it was just truly a lot of fun. And, you know, Joyce Duran would get up there, and she'd start banging away on the keys, and she'd get Boomer Sooner going and end with, you know, fuck you. And instead of
it sucks shit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I yelled.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it was, you know, just kind of grinding it. Then they'd break into the Nebraska song. We'd all stand up, whoop and clap. And that was Thursday night, you know, and then Friday, you know, we were there all flipping day. You know, I mean, it was just that's what we did on that weekend. So but yeah, John, you know, back to the game. John's told the story many times, and it was an incredible victory. You know, we ended up, we were into the game the whole time. The crowd was into the game the whole time. And
that,
know,
game, that game didn't start until like 5:30 at night or 6 o'clock, right?
Right. And it was one of the first games where they had lights at Memorial Stadium. I won't say it was the first one, but it was one of the first ones.
Right.
But yeah,
nobody was used to a game starting that late.
Yeah. Well, we were pretty much toast by the time the game started. And just kept drinking.
Was that game the game where one of our friends dressed up with makeup on because he had a girl's ticket?
I think you're right. I forgot about that. I thought you were going to ask if it was that game where one of our friends, I think the same friend, actually convinced the mascot team, Herbie the Husker, to be Herbie the Husker. And in the second half, he was Herbie the Husker. But I don't think it was the OU game. I think that was a different game.
Didn't he choke Mad Mike? We hated Mad Mike. Mad Mike was a screaming mascot.
but Husker Bob was fine. I mean, you know, Husker Bob, he was, you know.
Right. Yep.
But, oh, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. He dressed up like a girl so he could get in on a girl's ticket. Yeah.
Back in those days, you easily sold tickets. I do remember that. You know, every year student tickets, you'd buy the student tickets and then you'd sell like one or two of the crappy games to pay for it. But nobody ever sold their Oklahoma game ticket. When we had the good seats, especially for that Oklahoma game, I remember that so many people tried to crowd into our section. We almost got into fights, and I think we got rid of a few of them by accidentally dumping alcohol down their backs.
I think I heard something about that. I do know that that section was incredibly crowded. I do know that, you know, there were about 10 of us, and we were fairly formidable in terms of, you know, maintaining our spot. Damn it, it was a football game. We weren't going to let anybody, you know, take that away from us. And, you know, as the game went on and it was, you know, winding down in the fourth quarter, I mean, it was one of those seesaw back and forth games that, you know, as a fan, you're just fatigued at the end of the game. But we went over the rail and we got down on the field. And I know that, you know, we were actually trying to use our heads because we did not want to put ourselves in a position where we couldn't storm the field. You know, we didn't want to be down there where, you know, security, law enforcement, whoever it was, could get rid of us. And so we waited until relatively close to the end. You know, we all went over the rail. We stayed back. We made sure. And again, when I say we were kind of formidable, I almost remember, I don't think we linked arms, but, you know, we were really tight and we just kind of created this barrier. And, you know, we could feel people that were kind of pushing against us. So eventually we kind of edged up, you know, to the sideline. And then, you know, John, you remember the details of how that whole thing ended. But
Scott Strasburger intercepted a pass at the other end of the field.
Okay.
That was the end of the game, but it wasn't the end of the game because the gun didn't go off. There were 4 seconds left. People ran onto the field, had to get off the field.
We were still trying to hold people back because we knew the game wasn't over.
Right. And then when the gun went off, I just remember we were just swept up in the air. It was just like an explosion of people. It was amazing. Yeah. So when people say I was swept off my feet, that is an actual real thing that happens. I remember what I did. I went out, and I've told this story, and you're going to hear it again. I went out and tried to help tear down the goalpost. And the problem with this is you have a mass of humanity underneath a goalpost that's just out of the reach of everyone. So you have, like, one side of this crowd would leap to try to grab onto the goalpost, and they'd fail, so they'd push the side, everybody in that direction. And then the other side would push back. So you had this constant weaving back and forth, and, you know, because everybody probably was a little bit more intoxicated than they should have been. Nobody thought, let's just hoist some guys up there. But the idea was to get a hold of the goalpost and start putting weight on it on one side and then pull it down so that everybody could grab it. And in the midst of all this, I fell down. And you know what? I'll tell a little longer version. What I remember is this. I remember black and feet. And at the time, I had this, what I thought was this cool straw hat on, and it got kicked off of my head. And I remember I reached to grab it to pry and pull it back, and my arm started getting trampled. And this guy starts screaming, get him off the ground, get him off the ground. Because, you know, I could have probably been killed there. And then the sky parted, and this really huge guy reaches down and grabs me by the chest and lifts me to my feet. At which point I say, thank you, you just saved my life. And I ran to the 50-yard line. Yeah. And at the 50-yard line, there was a kid, a college student, sitting on the 50, that big logo. What was it, a Big 8 logo? I don't think it was the Nebraska logo. It was a big logo. But he was sitting there in his underwear eating an orange. And if you remember, the other thing about that game was it was probably about 20, 24 degrees, I think.
Really cold. Really cold.
It was cold. And that was the – previous to that game, especially students, whenever Nebraska would score, we would throw oranges onto the field.
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything nasty. Nobody was trying to hit anybody, although I do remember a guy that threw an orange at Tom Osborne, and the security people tried to – had to keep us from killing him. But everybody would throw oranges on the field to represent we're going to the Orange Bowl. That was the big game at the end of the year. And in that game, an official got hit, struck in the back of the head by a frozen orange and was disabled permanently. And that ended, that was the end of anyone ever throwing anything on the field at Nebraska, at least legally. You know, they stopped anything. And after that, they started searching people and being a little bit more serious about it.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Yeah. I remember, you know, vaguely, you know, out on the field, you know, rushing out onto the field. Of course, you know, we were with other people. And so, you know, to some extent, you were kind of trying to keep track of other people. But I do remember, you know, slapping the shoulder pads of a few players, you know, good job. And, you know, then in hindsight, I'm sitting here thinking, gee, many Christmas, those guys had to get back to the locker room going through that mass of humanity.
It looked like a war zone.
Yeah, it was.
And, because people were setting off smoke bombs and there was smoke all over the place.
It was amazing. I think my final, you know, what I vaguely remember of, you know, getting out of there, I think we ended up going out the north end for whatever reason. Somehow we got out, you know, the north end and then it was just, I don't even know how to describe it. It just outside the stadium, the entire area was just like a party. I mean, people yelling, screaming, whooping, dancing, you know, just, it was just insanity. And
then we made it back to our house. Was it the 1219?
Made it to 1219.
1219 New Hampshire. We made it back to 1219 New Hampshire to find our large friend from Oklahoma had stolen a tire cover off an Oklahoma RV.
Yeah, I forgot.
Big leather Oklahoma thing. And I think he was passed out with that wrapped up around him like a teddy bear or a blanket or something. And I think by that time we had learned that we did not abuse our large fan when he was upset about football and drunk.
Exactly. And you know, he was a hardcore Oklahoma fan, you know, going to college at the University of Nebraska. And I do recall, I can envision him now laying flat on his back with that wheel cut tire cover thing. And he was smoked. I mean, he was absolutely drop dead drunk. I mean, he was smoked. I'm sure when the game was over, he found the biggest bottle of hardcore liquor he could find and just started slugging it down. I'm willing to bet that's what happened.
1983, we win again in Norman.
See, 1980, those were our years, John. And then, you know, I've always said my favorite Nebraska player was Turner Gill. And Turner Gill, you know, he led that offense with Rozier and Roger Craig and Irving Fryer. You know, what an incredible bunch of athletes. And those were just great games. And it was incredible to be on that high because, you know, Nebraska ended up winning three games in a row. And they hadn't done that since the late 60s, 70s, you know. So what a time to be a student on campus at Nebraska. You know, you kind of get a little cocky swagger because we're beating Oklahoma.
Yeah, it was the game of the year every year. I mean, it was one of the biggest games in the nation.
Yeah, yeah.
So 1984, they beat us four times in a row, and we were very sad. Part of that was because our large friend got the best of us and let us know every time they did.
Well, I remember going back to one of those games after I graduated. It might have been like in 86 because they had, you know, Brian Bosworth, you know, the Boz and that whole era, you know, and that's kind of where Oklahoma turned the corner, you know, again and became, you know, one of the, you know, the team to beat. And it might have been 86 that I remember I went down there to Lincoln. I was teaching school in Northwest Iowa. And I went down to Lincoln to, because there was a football game on the day after Thanksgiving, Oklahoma game. This is one of the best stories, and kind of give you an indication. John knows my parents well, but I went down there fully counting on getting one of the two tickets. The family has two season tickets, fully counting on getting one of the tickets to the game on Friday. It was my birthday on Friday. And so I was without question confident that I was going to get one of those tickets for my birthday. And I remember eating Thanksgiving dinner on Thursday, and then we're sitting around, you know, that night watching football of some kind. And I kept, you know, waiting for somebody to say, well, Todd, do you want to go to the game tomorrow? And nobody did. And then my mom, this is what's so beautiful. My mom says, oh, Todd, we got your birthday card. And so I'm thinking, okay, yeah, ticket. And my mom comes up and hands me the birthday card. And, you know, I open the birthday card and I open it up, and there's a check in the card. And my mom had written in the card, I'm going to the game tomorrow. Here's $50. Buy your own ticket.
My God.
So I went down. I remember going down to the stadium with them, and I was able to find a ticket. I got a ticket for $50, $60, something like that. And it was a crappy seat. So I wandered the whole game. I walked the whole game, and I tried to find an empty seat, you know, to sit in for a little while till somebody came back. That game sucked, because that was when Sooner Magic, you know, was at its peak. And I thought for sure Nebraska was going to win that game. And then Oklahoma came back in the second half. Brian Bosworth had a big game. And that was one I wish hadn't gotten away.
Okay, that's 1987. Do you remember that game?
Not that much. I mean, I know that you mentioned that one was the one that was considered the second game of the century.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, but I don't remember much about that game, John. It was down.
Well, Broderick Thomas kept saying that, you know, he was a talker.
Yeah.
And people didn't like him. They liked Broderick Thomas, and he was really fun to watch, but they didn't like how brash he was. And they were like, he's not, you know, Nebraskans, we just back it up with our play. And he talks too much. And he did the whole, we have the keys to our house thing. And, you know, then Oklahoma came and they beat the shit out of us. Honestly, they just beat the living shit out of us. They didn't crush us. You know, nowadays you see games where it's like 56-3 or something like that, and you think, wow, that's an ass kicking. But it was 17-7. They physically just destroyed us. Our offense couldn't do anything. Somewhere in here, I made a comment, and my wife and I both believe it was at an Oklahoma game where we can't figure out which one it was. I always thought it was 87, because I think we were ahead at 7-0 at the half because Oklahoma had fumbled the ball so much. But our offense still wasn't doing a lot. And I made the comment that we were beating them bad enough that I felt sorry for them, or almost felt sorry for them. And to this day, she reminds me of this every time we have a lead and it looks like the other team might come back. So one of those things you say kind of innocently. And by the way, I have never felt sorry for any freaking team we're ever going to smash into the ground. I don't care if we're ahead by 50, just kill them more. No lead is safe. You know, but 1987, it was really disappointing. People don't mention it as the second game of the century. I think Nebraska and Oklahoma will run in two again. And the reason why we don't mention that in Nebraska is because it was such a physical butt kicking. I mean, I don't know. It was that was terrible.
Well, then, you know, as we still in 1987, we probably, John, were you still in school in 1987?
Yes, Todd, I crammed my 4-year art degree into 7 years by working my ass off.
That's right. Well, what I was trying to say was, you know, I think we still had some of the crew that were in college, and yeah, John, you were, but then, and you know, that made it easier for, you know, for me to come back, for games on the weekends because, you know, I could hang out with friends and go to the games and stuff. But then, you know, eventually we all had to move on and start, you know, quote unquote,
grow up, become grow adults. Up, yeah. The hell. Well,
when you think about it, from 1988 to 1997, Oklahoma only won one game. And, you know, that's not a surprise for a number of reasons. I mean, obviously in the 90s, that was the strongest era for Nebraska football. Osborne had, you know, the team playing at its peak, you know, three national titles in that period of time. It was also
Barry Switzer was done in 88.
Yeah, yeah, Barry Switzer moved on. And so, you know, that was that period of Oklahoma football history that a lot of those fans would really like to forget. Very similar to, you know, what we're going
where
through
we're at now.
Point in time, where we're at now. You know, I think Howard Schellenberger was there and John Blake was the head coach there.
Who's that goofy, wimpy guy?
I don't
Gary
know.
Gary something?
Gary Gibbs was there. He was the head coach there for a while. I think he was a linebacker coach with Switzer.
You know, I honest to God, when we beat him, like it was 1995, 37-0, 1996, 73-22, 97, 69-7.
Yeah.
I did feel sorry for Oklahoma then.
Well, those scores are incredible, but you know, also got Nebraska was beating a lot of teams that bad. And, you know, during
but that not year, Oklahoma, what? I mean, my God, you know, it was terrible to watch them fall that far. I know we hated them, but you know, the thing is every year it was like, let's get up for the Oklahoma game because it 99% of the time it was like the game that decided a huge part of college football. And then right. to see them fall that far, I mean, maybe they think of the same thing about us now, but
it was also that time that we became the Big 12 and we weren't playing Oklahoma every year. They moved it off Thanksgiving weekend in 1996.
And they stopped being our rivals then.
Yeah. Then Colorado became our rival. Right. But yeah, I don't know. It was neat to see the teams continue to play, even though they didn't get to play every year. It still was a big game, you know, and I guess I always look at the Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry. If I could pick one team for Nebraska to play, it would be Oklahoma. And I'm glad that they're playing them again this year. You know, I guess I kind of look forward to this game. And I'm sure we'll talk about it later in the week in the Five Heart podcast.
We have one more to go through.
Talk to
there
me about
my
that.
Dog. Be quiet. The last game that we played against them.
That was in 2010.
It was the Big Ten championship or the Big 12 championship game.
Right.
And we came out with what, a 17-point lead, and then all of a sudden we did nothing, and we lose that game 23-20 because we only scored 3 points in the second half. No, we scored zero in the second half. We had 23 points in the first half against them, a huge lead. And then we commit 4 turnovers in that game. I was said, you know, really, that would have been, you know, now we hear, oh, we haven't had a championship in over 20 years. Well, at least it would have been 10 with winning that damn thing.
Yeah. For some reason, I'm blank on these games that were played in the, you know, 2000-aughts and 2010s. So 2000.
Because we were both raising kids then.
Yeah,
2010. You know what they do to you?
That must
they
have
suck been your life. They suck your life away.
Well, Bellini must have been the coach in 2010.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I'm sure we never would have. We certainly didn't have any opportunities for big 12 championship games after Bellini.
I think in the one thing that I think that. Okay, I'm going to say younger people because I did say 4 older people by older people earlier. The one thing that younger people don't understand about the Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry is it wasn't just a game. It was Nebraska's morality against Oklahoma's morality. And we had Tom Osborne, who might as well be a saint in the Catholic Church. He was our...
He's a Methodist, but that's okay.
You know what I mean? He is our visual representation of Jesus Christ on earth during those times. He was an upstanding man full of honor, playing against Barry Switzer, who had a contract with Satan and cheated all the time. In fact, he had to quit football because he was cheating so much. And then you have Barry, what is he, frickin' Bosworth, you know, guy that couldn't play in a bowl game because he tested positive for steroids. You know, all of these things were because Barry Switzer and the Oklahoma Sooners weren't just good at football, but they were evil. And evil sometimes would triumph. And that's why everybody would feel bad. It wasn't just the football. You go through life with a malaise over your, a cloud over your head thinking, how can I live upon this earth when evil has triumphed?
Well, John, there's a token of truth to that. You know, I guess it was good versus evil. It was also kind of that nose to the grindstone, Midwestern work ethic, you know, pound it against the swashbuckling, you know, brash outlaw kind of a program. And, you know, it was the teams reflected the character and the characteristics of their head coaches. No question about that. You know, my goodness, Barry Switzer was quite the guy. And, you know, what made the rivalry fun was when he would, you know, show up on the set of, you know, when Bob Devaney was the AD and he was doing his weekly television show up in Omaha, and Barry Switzer would come onto the set and hand him a hot dog, you know, and just stuff like that. And
stuff that nobody'd ever do now because we'd all consider it horrible behavior.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think Bob Devaney was probably drinking when he was doing his show. No, nobody gave a shit. But you know, everybody gives a shit about every single thing now.
You know, even though, and you know, John, with your good versus evil analogy there, the thing that I remember about this, though, is that both sides valued the rivalry. I mean, you know, I think it was a rivalry. I, in my mind, it was a rivalry. It wasn't based on hate. It was based on respect. And even though you had, you know, kind of different characteristics for these teams, when it was all said and done, you know, you could walk up, you know, to opposing fans, and I'm sure the players could walk up to each other, look them square in the eye and say good game. Not like some of the other rivalries that, you know, Nebraska has had since.
Colorado.
Yeah. And then we got fuck ice, but you know, it's good to see it back. I'm glad that it's back. I look forward to the game, you know, this Saturday. After that one's over, we'll look forward to the one next year, assuming that Oklahoma has to play us. And what I mean by that, if they jump to the SEC a year or a couple years sooner than they're supposed to, will that affect their non-conference schedule? You know, who knows? I think that could be a possibility. But I really look forward to these two games. And it's unfortunate we don't get to play them every year.
I'm going to bring up one more game and then we're going to be done. We have to mention the 1959 game. Bill Jennings was a coach. Bud Wilkinson was the coach of Oklahoma football. Bud Wilkinson had at one point in his career a 57-game winning streak, but Nebraska beat Oklahoma 25-21 in 1959, and that ended Oklahoma's 74-game conference unbeaten streak.
Wow.
And it was the first time that Nebraska had beat Oklahoma since 1942, and the first time in 13 years that Bud Wilkinson was beat in a conference game. So one of the things about Bud Wilkinson, people don't remember him now in terms of when we talk about the greatest coaches of all time, but Bud Wilkinson actually quit coaching quite early in his life, not in his career. And then he went on to be a television announcer. But that guy was – he probably could have been, you know – we'd be talking about him and Nick Saban on the same sentence probably if he'd have kept coaching.
Yeah, I think so. I think had he kept coaching, they would have kept winning. And, you know, he would have been the benchmark for great college coaches. No question in my mind.
We probably could do another one of these with great players we remember, but we're coming up on an hour. So I think we should probably say this is good enough for now.
I think this is good enough for now. It'll be fun over the course of the next day. And, you know, it's already starting in the newspapers, you know, trying to bring back some of the nostalgia for this. So really looking forward to the game.
Same here. A big sigh. I hope we play well. Our defense looks like we can do something. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about that more later in the 5R podcast we do later in the week. For the two old guys, four old people by old people, memories of the Nebraska-Oklahoma games of the past, this is Todd and John signing off. Y'all take care of yourselves. Go Big Red.
Go Big Red.